Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehr Show on WNYC. I'm Sarah Gonzalez, sitting in for Brian Lehr. Good morning again, everyone. It's been a week since the deadly fire in an Oakland warehouse claimed 36 lives. The warehouse, known as the Ghost Ship, was home to about 25 artists. The deadly fire engulfed the warehouse during an electronic dance concert, and questions remain about how the fire started, who is to blame, and whether the city could have done more to prevent it. New York also has a long history of transforming buildings and warehouses into art and music spaces. And when we heard about the fire in Oakland, I think a lot of us here thought, you know, this is something that could happen here in Bushwick, in Williamsburg, in the Bronx, as it did at the Happy Land Social Club in 1990, a fire that killed nearly 90 people. So today we have with us the New York City Fire Commissioner, Daniel Nigro. And I want to open up the phones right away to landlords, business owners, or residents, regardless of whether you live in a warehouse or not. Do you have a question for the Fire Commissioner, Daniel Nigro? In the wake of this terrifying tragedy across the country, do you have any questions about fire safety, building codes, or anything else here in New York? 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. We have the New York City fire expert on the phone, so give us a call, 212-433-9692. And joining Daniel is Thomas Fuller, San Francisco Bureau Chief for the New York Times, to tell us about what's going on in Oakland. Good morning to you both, and welcome to WNYC.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So, Thomas, I want to start with you. Oakland is actually a really special place to me. I went to college in Oakland, Mills College, which is very close to where the fire happened. It's the very first city where I ever reported from. And one of the things that sticks out to me is that this isn't just something that impacted like some outsider artist community. The artist community seems to have really been embedded in Oakland. You know, when you look at the 36 people who died in the fire, they've really connected so many people. The son of a deputy in the sheriff's office died in the fire. Someone who worked at the NPR station in San Francisco, one of the NPR stations, past and present Berkeley students, someone I went to college with at Mills. Can you just tell us like what it's like, what it's been like in Oakland all this week and what the emotions are?
Well, it's been terrible. The fire took place in the Fruitvale neighborhood, which is a heavily Latino neighborhood. It's a neighborhood where it's no stranger to crime, and it's had its problems, but it's certainly never had something this terrible happen. This was an artist community that of which there are many in Oakland. This is a post-industrial city with warehouses that are filled with artists who were, you know, doing what they call in a live work space. So, you know, they have their studios and then they have their sleeping quarters. And this, you know, people who were inside say this was a little different from the other studios because it really had a lot of wood inside, and that was one of the real tragedies of the fire, that it went so fast. I mean, we spoke with a number of survivors who said it was really a matter of seconds to get out of the building.
And we don't know what started the fire, but can you tell us a little bit more about what the warehouse was like inside and how it spread so quickly, why so many people were trapped?
Well, the warehouse had a lot of artifacts, old pianos, Balinese beds, all sorts of, you know, it sort of looked like from the pictures, a bric-a-brac shop. And on the ground floor, it was a two-story structure. On the ground floor, you had the artists who lived there, and they had individual studios that were sort of cordoned off, or almost like cubicles. And in the very back, you had one particular studio where one of the witnesses, one of the survivors that we spoke with, she believes that the fire started in that particular cubicle. No one was in the couple that occupied that studio was not there at the time. There's been speculation that it started with one of the electrical appliances there. The federal investigators say it's too early to tell. The tragedy was that on the ground floor, you had all of this wood, and then on the top floor, where the vast majority of the victims were, was kind of an art space, a performance space, a little more open, not as cluttered, and that's where people were gathering for a concert, a party, they were trapped up there by the smoke, and they couldn't get down the staircase, which was made of wood, which burned, which was on fire by the time the firefighters arrived. So you had this timber on the ground floor that immediately caught fire and literally just, you know, sent flames up to the second floor. It was almost like, like a perfect fire. I mean, it was, you know, you had the timber, the kindling on the ground floor, and then you had the beams, and you had everything flowing upwards to where the majority of the people were. So it was an awful place to be on that top floor, because there weren't too many options to get out.
All right. And Commissioner Nigro, when you heard about this fire, did it make you stop and think about some of the artists, collectives, and warehouses here in New York City? I mean, are we living and playing in places like this in New York?
Well, I would say, first of all, New York City has what's the most stringent codes, building codes, fire codes in the United States. And we've been dealing with this for many, many years. You mentioned before, Happy Land was 1990. The department has been vigilant in pursuing these locations. The government needs to keep people safe, even folks who maybe don't care about their own safety. We care. So a situation like this in Oakland, which was really twofold, we had people living there illegally and an entertainment space which was operating illegally, two separate issues altogether, which we go out, look for, and vacate. And fortunately in New York, most of our real estate has become so valuable that people convert spaces legally. And many of our lofts and our former warehouses all over, you see all over Brooklyn, Greenpoint, Bushwick, are being legally converted or have been legally converted to other uses. And that's just fine. That's what we want to see. And if we come across a situation like the ghost ship, we will vacate it.
And you said the fire department goes out looking for fire code violations? Like what is that process
well,
like?
Well, there's three or four different ways. First, we have a licensed place of public assembly unit, which goes out. You know, some entertainment spaces, people apply legally through the building department for a temporary permit. I'm going to have an event tonight in this warehouse. We'd like a permit. And between the building and the fire department, we inspect it. And if it's safe, we approve it. And that's one thing that we do. We get tips through 311. We're starting a social campaign right now to get people on board. Like the police department says, we can't do this alone. We need the public's help. We have night teams that go out. There is a citywide team consisting of building department, fire department, and police department that look for illegal or unlicensed locations. You know, people, not just this type, but they've found people operating hotels in buildings that really aren't hotels. And we take care of it that way. And we have local fire companies in over 200 locations around the city that do inspections. So just this year alone, I think we've done 15,000 inspections. We've issued thousands of violations and summonses. And we take it very seriously.
Okay, I want to go to a caller. Mark in Brooklyn, I think, is with the fire department. Mark, welcome to WNYC.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Commissioner. I work in downtown Brooklyn, and it's been the case when we're on our BI, our building inspection period, where we come upon buildings where you know, it might be a converted warehouse, or there might be multiple either artists or work studios or workshops where we're sometimes not let in the building. And I'm wondering if the commissioner would have any more knowledge about if there were people in that space that would want it inspected or would feel comfortable letting us in, and there are some people who would not be comfortable letting us in, if there's some way that we would be able to inspect the premises.
And Mark, you're saying that as a firefighter, sometimes you come across warehouses that you feel like you want to check out, but you're not let in?
Well, it's also that sometimes the property comes up on our list of buildings to inspect, and there might need to be some updating of the condition, whether the owner's changed or there's been some application for a permit for remodeling, some things of that nature. And sometimes we are not allowed in. From my understanding, from a legal standpoint, people don't have to let us in. Whether it's, if it's considered a residency,
well,
or
the fire department does not have the right to enter private living quarters. So if we go into a multiple dwelling, we can inspect the basement, we can inspect the stairs, we inspect the roof, all of the public areas of that building, and not the living quarters of the building. Now, if people deny us entry to a commercial dwelling, a theater, a workshop, a factory, we do have the right. You know, certainly we don't force our way in, but we have the right to take that a step further, to look for an order to allow us to get into the building if we suspect that that building is other than what it is listed as. So if someone changes the nature of the building, the department has the right to go in, but not into the living space now.
And Thomas, one of the things that we learned from Oakland was that the, I guess, inspectors went to this warehouse. The neighbors had been filing complaints about the ghost ship. They went, they knocked on the door, nobody answered, and so then they left. And according to the Oakland Planning and Building Department, an inspector hadn't been inside the ghost ship warehouse in the last 3 decades.
Right. It's unclear if the inspector knocked on the door of the warehouse or was looking at the vacant lot next door, which was sort of filled with artifacts and campers and other things, that it was the same tenant who was renting that space. But in any case, people in the neighborhood have told us that they've had regular inspections, and they've also said that inspectors come by to look at, you know, more mundane things like, oh, you know, this is an illegal deck, or this is or this wall is 2 inches too high, or things like that. So the inspectors were around there, but the city has said that inspectors had not been in that building. There is video showing that police had been inside at least once.
Okay, and I'm going to get to some more callers in a second. But first, I want to play a clip. This is from the Today Show, and this is Matt Lauer. It's the first clip, clip A. This is Matt Lauer asking the manager of the warehouse, Derek Almena, if he is the man who should be held responsible. And here's how he responded.
Obviously, I didn't do anything ever in my life that would lead me up to this moment.
Can I ask you if you are...
I'm an honorable man. I'm a proud man. No, I'm not going to answer these questions on this level.
Are you worried that you
will
be charged?
I'd rather get on the floor and be trampled by the parents. I'd rather let them tear at my flesh than answer these ridiculous questions.
Mr. Almena,
I'm so sorry. I'm incredibly sorry. What do you want me to say? I'm not going to answer these questions.
Thomas, is this about, I mean, is the manager of the warehouse responsible? Is it more about a hands-off landlord, the person who owned the warehouse, or is it, you know, up to the city?
These are the questions we're asking. We have a team of five reporters here. We're doing something different, by the way. On the if you look at the New York Times website, we're trying to sort of show the process of investigating this ourselves and calling for reader input. And we welcome anyone who's listening to send in any input. But the you know, who is responsible? Is it the owner? Is it this sort of master tenant who then sublet the apartment to the various artists who were there? The master tenant lived upstairs with his three children and his partner, and they were not present the day of the fire. They were in a hotel. But that's something that the district attorney here is looking into. I don't know if there's, you know, immediate precedent in Oakland to guide us.
Okay, and I want to go to some more callers. Virginia in Brooklyn has a question about fire safety. Virginia, welcome to WNYC.
Hi. I don't have so much as a question as a comment. My son, who lives in has a studio, he does not live in it, in Bushwick, started a fire by throwing out rags that had turpentine in them from cleaning his brushes. He put them in his waste basket, and they started a fire. Luckily, nobody was injured. But I think a lot of artists aren't aware of those kinds of dangers, and they should be alerted to them.
Okay. Commissioner, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think it's one of the things, if you're operating as an artist, that you should be aware of. We try to make people aware of these things, and there are many laws that govern how to dispose of materials safely in factories, in workspaces. So perhaps we need to get that message out to artists that are otherwise operating safely, but may not be aware of all of the nuances.
I think that would be a good idea, just because my son is a Yale-educated man, and he wasn't aware. I don't know how it slipped by him, but it would be a good idea in studio spaces to have big signs alerting them to the dangers of turpentine-infused racks.
All right, Virginia, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
I want to go to Vernon in Staten Island. Vernon, welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a rhetorical question. Where are artists supposed to go when they're priced out of every available space? There's no affordable space. Where are artists supposed to do what they're doing when gentrification makes it impossible for people to start their lives working in art? What are we training artists to do and go when they graduate? Or people that are self-taught, where do they go? Because I know the situation really well. Years ago, my band Living Color, we had a loft out in Bushwick, 1102 Broadway, above a refrigerator repair place. We heated the place in the wintertime with a kerosene heater. There was no heat in the place. Whenever I started that heater, I was deathly afraid that there was going to be an explosion. I had a fire extinguisher nearby. We shared that space with a painter. There was no other place for us to be. We celebrate artists later on, though. Like the Keith Haring becomes a big name, or Jean-Michel Basquiat. Then they're all over the New York Times, and, you know, they're a big deal. But where does it even start? I mean, I feel a very emotional kinship with the victims of the ghost ship. And one of the things to me is that the artists themselves are blamed. Well, they should have been this or they should have been that. But they're young people with a dream. How does the dream even get started? Especially now.
Thank you, Vernon. The Brian Lehrer Show always appreciates when you call in. Thomas, I want to, maybe you can answer this question. I know that you have been following one of these conversations that has come up, which is around gentrification and people being priced out of housing and living in this sort of underground way. I imagine that there can exist, a scenario where there can be a balance between artist collectives and people living in that way, but in a safe way.
Well, this is the huge subtext of this story. As I said, we've opened up our investigation to sort of, you know, reader input, and we have an enormous number of hundreds of emails talking about the housing crisis in the Bay Area. As most people know, San Francisco has had this massive tech boom, and the repercussions across the Bay Area have made the housing crisis even more acute than it was in the past. So, yes, that's the question that people are asking now. Given the spike in rents across the Bay Area, all these, you know, Silicon Valley workers who are pushing up rents, given that spike, Is there a way for affordable housing to also be safe housing? Is there a way for artists and musicians to live in conditions that are both affordable and safe?
And Commissioner, before we end, I want to go back to you. I imagine that there are people in New York City who are living maybe in these sort of underground spaces. Do you have any advice for them, any fire safety tips for them?
Well, first of all, I would say that if you own a space and you have and it's being operated illegally, so if it's a space that's not a residence and you have people living there, if it's a space that's not for entertainments and you're having parties there, you will be liable. You are responsible for the place that you own. So I would say that. To the folks that might live in substandard housing, I would say that they're putting their, and I know there's a housing crisis, we all know that, but the job of the fire department is to keep folks safe. And if you don't have two ways to get out of your apartment, if your apartment is, as the gentleman said before, being heated with a kerosene heater, you are putting yourself every day and your family in grave danger. And if you have neighbors, you're putting them in danger. So our job is to keep you safe. And I think we can find ways to house people, to provide space for artists that are safe. And the department tries very hard to work with the building department, with all the other agencies in the city to do that. But our fundamental job is to ensure the safety of the citizens of this city.
And Commissioner, we're obviously dealing with another kind of tragedy in the city, the two young sisters in the South Bronx who died when they were burned by radiator steam in city housing that was meant for homeless. How does something like this happen? Does this fall under, is this a fire code violation? Is this a city code violation?
You know, it's not, and it's probably not any violation. You know, it's a steam heat depends on an air valve to release air, and exactly how this valve became detached from the radiator, I don't think has been determined yet. But I think what it was a very freak accident, a tragic accident. I have seen these things happen before. You know, I started in the fire department 47 years ago, and I've responded to many steam leaks, but I've never seen anyone seriously burned or killed like that, I can tell you.
Wow. Okay. So maybe something that people at home with that kind of heat need to think about this weekend.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I think we are going to end it there. Thomas Fuller, New York Times, San Francisco Bureau Chief, thank you for joining us. And please give a hug to Oakland for me and the Fruitvale District, which is the greatest district neighborhood in Oakland, I think. New York City Fire Department Commissioner Daniel Nigro, thank you for taking so many questions from our listeners about fire safety. Thank you both.
Thanks.